The Inner Voice Show is a dialogue between the host and the listeners about their relationships. This show is not an attempt to assess, diagnose, or treat any mental health or illness condition. Please consult your physician, psychiatrist, or psychotherapist for personal matters.
Inner Voice. A heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian and have Sean in studio. Now, this show is about what matters most in life, your life, our life, our minds, thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Now, in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about changes in the brain region when we're depressed or addicted, and the second study of how people's interpretation actually affects suicide. I will talk to Cindy Goodman, Dr. Cindy Goodman Stahlberg, the author of Feeling Better, the book Feeling Better. And then you can call us also at the studio. You could talk to me. You could talk to Dr. Stahlberg. And call us at 951-922-3532. So we're going to talk about depression, what constitutes depression, what constitutes interpersonal psychology. And we'll come back and we'll go talk about all of it. And then at the end, actually let you know how you can actually minimize your depression. I think we're going to have fun with this show. So we'll be right back.
Dr. Fujian Zane is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it.
So in a new clinical research, scientists at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, led by Dr. Scott Thompson, the professor of physiology, have identified changes in the brain activity linked to the pleasure and reward system. Now, the research published in the journal Nature provides new insights into how the brain processes rewards and advances our understanding of addiction and depression. Now, the research discovered that the strength of signals between two brain regions, the hippocampus and the nucleus accumbens, is critical processing information related to a rewarding stimulus, such as its location. So these two parts of the brain are known to be important in processing reward experiences. Now, the communication between these regions is stronger in addiction, although the mechanism underlying this were unknown. We also suspected that the opposite changes in the strength of this communication would occur in depression. A weakening of their connection could explain the defect in reward processing that causes symptoms of anhedonia in depressed patients, which is the inability to enjoy normally pleasurable experiences such as eating food, being with your friends, family, and having sex. Now, this research uncovered a key circuit in the brain of mice that is important for goal-directed behaviors and shows that the strength of the signals in this circuit are changeable. So a process referred to as plasticity. Now, reward circuits and the molecular components that underline that plasticity represented new targets for development and treatment of disorders like addiction and depression. In this study, what they did was take in the mice, and then they put the light proteins in these regions and found out that the depressed mice, these proteins were not really helping at all. But with the addiction and the normal mice, these proteins were really helping to change the plasticity. And with the addicted, because their reward system was working high, they were having overreaction on those. So what they did was with the depressed mice, which the light was not working, after some antidepressants, they saw that it actually changed the communication between the two regions. So they're trying to look into what are other ways of opening up the communication between the two paths on the brain so we could minimize depression. Now, the second research was very interesting. The researchers at Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland have revealed that 1/4 of suicide, 1 out of 4, attempt are associated with dysfunction in how the brain interprets basic perceptual information, such as what they see and what they hear and what they think, which is really not based on reality outside at that moment. So the research shows that this type of dysfunction can predict suicidal behavior and offers new prospect for treatment of suicide prevention. The research was published actually today in Journal of American Medical Association of Psychiatry. Now, symptoms such as depressed moods, feelings of worthlessness, and a sense of hopelessness are well documented in suicidal behaviors. Now, in the analysis of more than 80,000 people, new research had revealed that 1/4 of individuals who attempted or died by suicide had problem in basic sensory experiences, such as hearing or seeing things that aren't really there, and otherwise known as perceptual abnormalities. Now, such episodes are not necessarily associated with psychotic illnesses or depression and can occur in people who do not experience mental illnesses, according to this study. Now, research over the past 15 years has shown that experiences such as hearing voices are far more common than previously thought. About 5 to 7% of the general population report at least occasionally having experiences such as hearing voices. For some people, these experiences emerge when the brain is under a lot of stress or when coping levels are exceeded. Now, the research shows that if we can understand and treat the factors associated with these perceptual abnormalities, then we could prevent at least 1/4 of suicide attempts. And that's given about 1 million people die by suicide every year. Now, that's a very encouraging prospect for suicide prevention. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Cindy Goodman-Stahlberg and talking about her new book with her co-author, Feeling Better.
KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on the Internet Stream.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fushan Sain, and I am excited to be with Dr. Cindy Goodman-Stolberg. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Dr. Cindy Goodman-Stolberg and Dr. Ronald Frey are the authors of Feeling Better, and they're both directors of the Institute for Interpersonal Psychotherapy. Now, Cindy is a psychologist who has counseled individuals, couples, groups, and families for more than 40 years. And Ron is a psychologist with multifaceted experience, including consulting with various public safety and national defense entities, such as the Canadian Police and the FBI. You can visit them at interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you. And thank you very much for inviting me to speak with you today and to your listeners. I really appreciate it.
Oh, of course. So first, tell us about interpersonal psychotherapy. Let us know how that is, what that is, and then how is that different with other types of talk therapies?
Interpersonal psychotherapy is one of the kind of best kept secrets in psychology because it has been around since the 1960s. It was developed by a psychiatrist and psychologist, Dr. Klerman and Dr. Wiseman. But basically, it isn't as widely known as some of the other therapies. It's a short term, usually about 8 to 12 weeks. And primarily, it's about helping people improve their relationships. And if for them to have good, meaningful, constructive relationships, that it really helps their mood improve. So I think that's the basis of what it was developed. It was originally developed for to treat people who had depression, and it has been adapted for people who are experiencing relationship stresses and problems and other issues in their lives. So you don't have to have depression just to use this model, but it is extremely effective, and it's been highly recommended by many, many organizations with equal efficacy to CBT, which is another treatment model, probably a lot more well-known than IPT is.
Yes. Now, you've talked about feeling better in your book, Feeling Better. You've talked about different types of maybe depression, one of it being an illness. So you talk about it as if, you have a broken leg. And it's similar to the way that you approach depression. And then you also talk about the elements that interrelatedness with the issues in life, such as grief or other issues in life, which will make anybody who's not necessarily having a depression as an illness will go through bouts of depression just because of life circumstances. So tell us from your perspective and Ron's perspective on how do you see depression from an illness model and from just a therapeutic model?
I think the idea of it being an illness really has to do with the trying to destigmatize this for people. Because I think when someone has a broken leg, or if you have diabetes or epilepsy, people feel more comfortable sharing that information with other people. But sometimes when people are struggling with mood difficulties, first of all, you can't see it. It's not like you're wearing a cast, right? And everybody signs your cast. But with something like depression, I think in the past, and unfortunately still in some cases, people blame themselves. They feel they're doing something wrong. Or another person might approach you and say, oh, you have a great life. Why don't you just, suck it up and get on with it, right? So I think there's a lack of understanding. So in many ways, it's not as important to understand what causes it But the idea of thinking about it as a treatable illness is really purposefully to say it can be treated. It's not your fault. You haven't done anything wrong. You don't need to blame yourself or put more pressure on yourself, because really nobody wants that. There's no one I know who chooses to feel terrible and have trouble getting out of bed, right? So I think that's the premise of thinking about depression as an illness, and that it's temporary. If you work and you get the proper treatment, you can feel better and you can continue to help yourself prevent future episodes by knowing what to do to make yourself feel better. So that's kind of the first part of your question. I would think you'd see it that way. Would probably most people agree with that, right?
Absolutely. What do you see different between looking at it from a perspective of an illness or versus life situations, life phase situations, or the grief or going or loss, let's say?
And I don't think it has to be either or. So okay. I think looking at it both ways, the first part is to not blame oneself and to try to destigmatize. Mm-hmm. And the second part is to be able to say many of the contributing factors or triggers to an episode of depression or struggle, right, is the focal areas we talk about. So yes, if you're having serious conflict with someone else and it's difficult to manage, you're going to feel terrible, right? Or if you've had an unresolved bereavement where someone has passed away quite a long time ago, but you still feel as awful today as you felt a number of years ago, or you're going through a transition in life, whether it's a divorce or you're moving, or people who struggle with postpartum issues after the birth of a child, right? Those will trigger, and those life events will often be a catalyst for struggling with your mood. Or if you have a lot of feelings, if for a long time you have feelings of loneliness and isolation, where you have difficulty making and sustaining relationships. So it's not really an either or thing. I think it's both. It's a combination of, you know, what we call an illness or a struggle. And then it's to begin by addressing the situations that are contributing to why you feel as badly as you feel.
And you also talk about feelings in the way to sort out the feelings, and like you're sorting out anything else around you versus mm-hmm. just being caught into it. Because as I'm hearing you say, is the first perspective is to accept where I'm, what's going on with me, have compassion with myself about what's going on with me. I don't have to avoid it or deny it or feel shame about having the depression. So then when I accept it as if it's another event or issue that happens to me, such as broken leg, and then, you know, it's a temporary concept and I can shift it, then I can go back and seeing what is it that is creating the feelings for me. So right. Tell us a little bit about how to sort those feelings from your perspective.
I think there are steps that we take, because oftentimes people don't necessarily know exactly how to identify what they're feeling. Some people are great at it and will tell you all the time, but you probably know. And when I speak to people or I listen to other clinicians talk about their clients, you know, you'll ask someone how you're feeling and they'll give you a long extended answer that has nothing to do with sadness, or it's usually explaining what's going on. And one of the first steps is to really have an awareness of saying, if I'm angry, and people get angry very, you know, often that's a common thing, but what else is going on? What else is underneath the anger? Am I feeling sad? Am I feeling inadequate? Am I feeling frustrated? So one of the first steps is to help people become more aware. And in the book, we really take people through a number of questions to help them identify what it is they're feeling, give them the words for it, help them articulate it. How can I tell someone else? That's a huge component of interpersonal psychotherapy, is you really need to develop the constructive relationships with other people whereby you're talking to them. You're explaining to them what's going on. You're getting advice from others. You're hearing that they're struggling as well. So the feeling chapter and feeling, you know, one of the steps is to be able to make yourself aware of what you're feeling, to articulate it, to help people widen the range of their feelings, and then to examine them. And the next steps are now, what am I going to do now that I know I'm feeling inadequate, or I'm feeling crappy, or I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling discouraged, right? That's just step one. That's why the feelings are so important to address.
And what you said also is important about, then I look at what is it that I need to do after? Because I think that one of the things that happens with depression is that people get stuck in those feelings. And it's almost like an unremovable concept. There's a hopelessness and a powerlessness, even about the feeling and the thought process itself. And they're just, you know, they sit in this doom place without the ability to move on, or think that it doesn't matter what they do because of the powerlessness. So there's an action, which is what I hear from you, say you first are aware. So because you got to distinguish and figure out what it is. And after that, then there is a shift into what is it that I can do. And
yes.
In your book, you also talk about four different problem areas in the life that maybe contributes to this type of feeling and stuckness and holding on to, you know, the feelings that construct the depression. Tell us about that.
And I think those were similar. Those are the focal areas where you look at conflict and disputes that you may be having with someone else. And with the idea of, or am I going through a transition, or am I dealing with bereavement? Am I feeling lonely or isolated? And the reason we do that is because we pick one or two of those areas, and then we develop a goal to work on. You as the person says, this is what I want to work on. I want to work on figuring out how to feel better about the situation I'm in. You know, I've had a new baby and, you know, I'm really tired and I've lost my friends from work and I'm the only one, you know, and I'm up all night and I really don't know what I'm doing. And I mean, I can recall that my kids are old now, right? But, you know, at that time in life, it's a new role. And if your goal, you know, we try to help people identify a one goal to work on that's concrete, because you don't want to feel overwhelmed by everything sure. you're dealing with. And I think that's an important part about having a focal area or a choose your own adventure, right? Part of it is to say, I don't need to work on everything at one time. I want to pick one area that's maybe the most significant for me right now, or that's causing me the most distress. Or other people sometimes pick the one they think they can accomplish the quickest or the easiest. And you deal with that one thing at a time. You choose a goal that's very concrete, not one that says, oh, well, I want to be the best mother or father I can ever be, right? Because that's impossible. And besides it being impossible, how do you even know when you got there, right? Mm-hmm. So you choose a very concrete goal that's, we call the SMART goal, and you make it specific. So for example, if I'm a parent and I'm struggling with my kids, instead of saying, well, I'm going to stop yelling at them, I'm going to say, well, I'm going to have a conversation with them about how much screen time they're allowed every day. Or if I disagree with my partner as to how to handle something, you know, I'm going to say my goal is to decide on one thing we both agree on and how we're going to implement that with our family. So we choose one goal. You work on that one goal over time, short, you know, period of time. And then you know what felt better. You know what worked, so that you can keep applying that skill to the next area and the next problem and the next problem. So it's a very kind of collaborative but very concrete approach. And like you say, it's not just talking about something forever. Right. It's we want to make a change and we want to feel better than we're feeling right now.
And what you're suggesting is if they actually look at some concrete action where they can find their strength within that reality based.
Yes.
This is not something illusionary out there.
No.
or philosophical. Because sometimes
no.
when
practical.
Right. Because something, Cindy, which is interesting, is many times what we see, we do it ourselves, and we see it in our probably clients. It's that an obstacle happens in front of us, then we get stuck, or it triggers some emotions and thought process. Then we generalize it and make it into a philosophical concept, right? That I'm this way overall. I'm no good at this overall, or the world is this way and nobody's good, and you shouldn't trust anybody. So that type of what you also yes. get cognitive behavioral. And then somehow trying to deal with it in that level of huge generalization, that it becomes powerless. Of course, we're going to feel powerless and hopeless about it in that realm.
It's way too big. We basically help our readers and people who use this to take one step at a time and to become very detailed, right? So if you say to me, yeah, it's a, nobody understands me. Why should I talk to them? Why, you know, no one. So I'll say, okay, give me an example of currently here and now, not 10 years ago when the person didn't get you. What happened with that person today or yesterday or the day before? What did I say? What did they say? How about if I said it differently? What if I talked to the other person and asked them what was making it difficult for us to communicate and understand each other? We ask somebody to say, what does understand mean? What would the other person be saying or doing to let you know that they understood you? So you're right. We don't blow. It's not this big amorphous thing that feels terribly heavy, and that where do you begin? Where are you going to even start, right? So one of the advantages of this model is it's very specific. It's very concrete. And we give people a lot of help step by step by step by step what they can do to see that they can solve something, that they can feel differently than they feel right now.
And something I'm hearing from you is a lot of this is done immediately, processing through relationships, but also the actions are immediately going to be done within the communication in relationships, because ultimately interpersonal psychotherapy means you're dealing with relationships. So it's not just that you work with them inside their head and they're processing in their head. It's really looking at how did this happen within a relationship? And then as you open it up and work in a smart kind of a goal, concrete goal, you take it back and let them know that, like, next week, can you work? Can you talk this way? Can you specifically go back to that relationship and do the action so you can see it immediately in front of you?
Exactly. And that's what helps you feel better. That's the primarily, it's not in your own head. It's not an irrational thought. It's not a something that you're doing wrong. It's not that you're, you know, it's basically, it's not about what's in your head. We certainly encourage people to clarify things. So if I say, oh, well, you know, I thought that person was really dismissive and I didn't like that, they assume a lot. But what if you went and you asked them? What if you directly said to the other person, did you want to stop the conversation? Are you saying we can't talk about this in the future? And the person says, no, that's not what I meant, right? We can get ourselves extremely worked up for a long period of time, you know, assuming. And when people have mood difficulties, one of the symptoms is negativity,
right?
So that happens automatically. So instead of doing something that isn't working for you, we offer other alternatives that could possibly work better for you. So the best question I often ask, and I want people to ask themselves, is say, well, how's that working for you, the way you're doing it now, right? You want to keep it up? Be my guest. You want to continue to feel miserable? I feel badly for you, but that's your choice. It's really up to each individual to say, if the way I'm doing it now isn't working, then maybe I'm willing to try something different. And we give them ideas of what could be different or help them explore what could be different for them.
Now, Cindy, at the beginning, you said, I don't know if anybody actually chooses to be upset and depressed. I'm going to link it and bridge it back to what you just said right now, which is, at times, it just seems like if a person maybe is not aware or aware but familiar with a pattern that they've consistently done, that the same sentence you just said, well, is it working for you? And they're like, no, it's not. However, it's a familiar pattern that they keep going back to. And the realization of that also might give them the choice and the option of attempting to shift the way that they're thinking, feeling and acting in order to move themselves forward.
And for sure, it's very familiar and they're pretty good at it, right? If I get mad all the time, I'm good at that. I know how to do that. It happens like automatically and it happens very easily. But if I say to someone, what if you ask instead? What if you say to the other person, it's an example that just kind of comes to mind. You know, if you approach your kid or your husband and you say, you know, you may be surprised, but I really don't like arguing with you, you know, or I don't like calling you a jerk every day when I'm mad,
right?
Then they look at you differently, right? You look at them differently. You're approaching them by saying, I don't like the way we're doing this. Right. You probably don't like it either. Why don't we sit and we care about each other? We really are on the same team. You know, it may not seem like that all the time, but I'd like us to find a different way of doing this, right?
Yes.
So you're right. And when something's not familiar, often people, readers or clients might feel a little anxious, like, well, what's going to happen if I tell my partner that I'm feeling nervous about something? What if I tell my friend that, you know what, every time they mention their mother, I get sad because I really miss my mom who died 3 years ago, right? What's going to happen? Are they going to stop being my friend? Are they think I'm not interested in them? You know, when something's unfamiliar, we kind of get nervous. We kind of get anxious. We're not sure what's going to happen. So it's easy to fall back to the old familiar. But we really encourage people, what if to try that different way, make a change, because you know what if it's good? What if it works out really well? What if your friend says, you know what, thank you for telling me. I really appreciate you being open with me, because sometimes I don't know whether I should tell you what's going on in with my family or not, right? Mm-hmm. So think about how that can bring people together and how that can create a feeling of closeness when you're really being honest and open with one another as well, right? Yes. Trying that unfamiliar, that different approach, the new approach versus the old approach, right?
And as you were talking, I know that in the communication that people have with others, the concept of how they become vulnerable in sharing their views stops them from sharing themselves the other party. And they live based on that assumption and communicate because they also don't want to share their vulnerabilities and how powerful it is when they do, when they take care of themselves and do that. And you also encourage your readers of your book, Feeling Better, which you've written with Dr. Ron Frey. You also encourage them to look at their who's are. So say a little bit more about what does that mean?
I think really, as you say, you know, in terms of the relationships, what we help people do is initially draw their social circle. So that's basically to really look at who do you connect with? Who are the important people in your life, right? And we ask people to kind of draw it out. They're in the middle and then they add people in the next circle. And I've done it myself. I just don't ask other people to do it. And it's not as easy to do as you think it is. But in terms of, we also ask four questions when you're looking at beginning to look at your relationships. You know, where do you see them? How do you communicate? You know, how often? What do you like about the relationship? What don't you like about the relationship? and what would you like to be different? So what's really important is when we look at relationships, we try not to look at them as good and bad. You know, this person's good and they're always there and this person is terrible and I hate them and I'm never, it's, you know, because most relationships are gray. They're not black and white. There's some good about them. There's some bad about them. I mean, even if a person will say, well, I hate my mother-in-law, there's nothing good about her, you know, and then I'll say, yeah, but she had your partner, your spouse, didn't she? There's got to be something good that happened. So by doing it that way, we are able then to look at the relationships that are going and try, number one, can we build on those? Can we make a change if we want to make a change? The other person may change or they may not. Maybe I'll change the way I interact with that person. Maybe both of us will change. Or the other option that I always pose to individuals is, what if what they do bothers me less? Right? If I work on finding a way that if they're not going to change, if I'm not going to change, and I want to still maintain the relationship, how am I going to handle it so that it bothers me less than it bothers me right now? Right? Or if a relationship is so bad or so negative, you may end it. And then we'll deal with that as well. But I think having those who's really looking at your relationship and finding the people in your life who you can talk to, who are really there. If you don't open up to them, even though you may feel vulnerable, I mean, that's a word we all kind of use. How are you going to get the care and the support and the encouragement and the ideas and the help if you don't let somebody know what's going on with you? And, you know, it gives them a chance to tell you what they're going through. So you probably see if I share something with someone else, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they share something with me, right? Yes. So that to me is a very common occurrence that if you don't talk to someone else, that isn't going to happen. You're not going to get that care and that kindness and that, you know, I'm not alone in this situation.
Well, it also brings up a little bit of a sense of being in control, being in power, because if I only see the issues from the external world, like, you know, I have a mother-in-law, I have someone out there, or my boss, or somebody's out there where I completely feel the utter level of powerless against them. And like you say, I go back and forth and I only see the negativity, can't see the positivity, can't see any of it, then I would experience a lot of just stuckness. So the way that you're also, as I hear you approach, is creating some sense of power. Even if nothing changes, if they are who they are, I'm who I am, the circumstances is the same, how can I suffer less? What can I do internally to shift this from inside?
Yeah. And you've taken back your power, your right, and how much energy, emotional energy, am I going to use up on that person, right? And it's fascinating because I know I had an individual I worked with and she used up so much anger. She was constantly angry at her ex-husband. This was like 15 years down the road, right? And finally, and she was stuck. And one of the things you can always ask yourself too is to say, well, what am I getting out of that anger? There's got to be something that I'm not willing to give up. So if you ask yourself, what would be bad if I changed? And the one thing she said is she thought, well, that means I'd be forgiving him. And so what we had to do was separate out. No, you don't have to forgive him for treating you badly, but you don't have to still be angry because the anger isn't doing anything for you. It's just harming you and your children and your family and everything else in your life. So really, you're right about creating some self-efficacy, right? Self-empowerment, where I feel good. And, you know, the other thing we do with people, too, no matter what happens with the other person, if you go and you say constructively how you feel, I always ask people to pay attention to how that makes them feel. Right. So if you've said to your boss, you know, I'm trying the best I can, but I feel like I'm doing the job of two people, can we find a way to solve this? It doesn't matter what the boss does. Right. But see, if you know what, you know as well that people all say people feel better for having spoken up for themselves, for having said something, for not shoving it down. And that's a win too. That's a huge win that you yourself have done, right?
Right. Yes. Now, everyone, you're listening to Inner Voice and Dr. Cindy Goodman, the author of Feeling Better, with the co-author of Ron Frey. Cindy, hang in there for a minute, and everybody, we'll be right back because we want to ask you about the expectation and the role of expectation. So don't go anywhere, you guys. Come back because we got the juice still waiting to be heard.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet stream.
Dr. Fushan Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fushan has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fushan.com. That's www.fushan.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want by Dr. Fushan Zain. You can get it now at Fushan.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the Awareness Integration Path to Create the Life You Want. You deserve it.
We're back. Dr. Cindy Goodman, the author of Feeling Better, with Dr. Ron Frey. So, Cindy, you talk about expectations, the type of expectations that are kind of play along with how we get depressed and how shifting those expectations would minimize it or create healing for us. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think it's a very valuable issue because I don't know about you, how you feel about it, but I think you kind of come to realize that you can't expect one person to do everything you want all the time in the way you want it and any minute you want them to be there for you. So really clarifying expectations and having realistic expectations is quite an important part of developing a constructive relationship. Right. You know, and I think sometimes it takes a while in a relationship to realize that. So, you know, when you want your partner to listen to every word you have to say and you want them to be, you know, supportive and you want them to be attentive and there are just days when that's just not going to happen. Right. Doesn't mean they're a bad person and they don't care about you, but they may not want to hear what you had to say for the 10th time. Right?
Sometimes. I have this with the clients which come in and they're like, am I asking too much? And it's like, it's not even whether it's too much or too little. It's just not real. And if it's not real, you're always going to be very disappointed holding on to that consistently.
Yeah. So I think the thing is to be able, if you're having a struggle with someone, to really try to identify what are your expectations in the relationship and then make sure you ask them. What are their expectations? What would make it easier for them, you know, to be able to say, is there anything that I'm doing that's making it difficult for you to talk to me? or to share that with me. So to be really open and not get defensive and not right. say, oh, that's wrong, or no, you're, you know, that's ridiculous, right?
Right.
So, you know, to have a meaningful conversation with someone, to be open to talking about what do I expect? What do I expect of myself in that relationship? What do I expect of them? And then ask them what they expect as well of me and of themselves. And then to try to align those. So if we can have similar expectations and values, then we're going to be able to do better. If we can change those expectations, if we can modify them, then once we've articulated them, we can negotiate a little bit. We can talk about things one item at a time, and we can come to some agreement so that most of the things that we want, most of the important things in our lives are mutually compatible, right?
Yes.
Not every one of them, but, you know.
But
yes, most of them.
Cindy, one of the conversations that shows up also with depression is unrealistic expectation that people have of themselves, such as, you know, I'm not good enough in over in totality, or that the way that they have formed those expectations of how perfect I should consistently be, which they're, again, so unrealistic. And somehow people also have expectation that if they have strength in one area, that that's strength should have been on the other area, while they never had the practices on the other area for this to transfer, or they're not aware of it to transferring. So part of the way that you're also working in interpersonal psychotherapy, not only with the way that they're expecting with people, you also said that checking realistically what their expectation is about themselves, because that usually also is trigger, a main trigger for depression, of the way that they think of themselves, which is so negative and generalized and doomed.
And also, if you think, I expect of myself to do this and this and this and this for everybody else, right? And if you take the time to ask other people who you assume you have to do it for, and they say, I never expected that. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask you to, you know, clean the house, you know, make the party, invite everybody over, you know, have six choices for dinner, as opposed to, I didn't expect you to earn this amount of money, right? I didn't expect you to call my mother and my aunt and my relatives, and, you know. So I think, number one, yeah, we do put a lot of pressure on ourselves, right? And we do it because we either think we need to or want to, right? I mean, and it was very funny when I first got married. I remember sitting and making the first dinner at home, and I didn't know how to cook. So I made, like, you know, Kraft dinner, macaroni and cheese, and I sat crying, right? And I'm thinking, and, you know, my husband's looking at me. This is 45 years ago, mind you. He said, what are you crying about? I said, well, good wives don't make Kraft dinner, and I hate Kraft. And it's like, that was my expectation of myself, was that's what a good wife 45 years ago did, right?
Yes.
But I didn't need to do that, right? It took me a while to get it. But the point is, we put so much pressure on ourselves, and why not ask the person? Why not accept what they're telling us, right? Why not just listen to one another and stop putting so much pressure on ourselves unnecessarily to be all, you know, we're good, you know, we're good enough sometimes. We really are, right? I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm not good at, right? And I always buy too much food, and somebody always says, oh, gee, you have too much. But I don't get upset anymore, because that's who I am, right? So unless I want to change that, I need to accept what I, you know, my strengths and my weaknesses, right?
Yes. Now, looking at the book, and the type of a relationship where interpersonal psychotherapy looks at, what is it that you're hoping you and Ron, Dr. Ron Frey and Dr. Cindy Goodman-Stolberg, are the author of Feeling Better. I want to know, in this book, Feeling Better, what you and Ron wanted your readers to really take away, and how to utilize that in their relationship, in what format?
I think we really wanted to share this wonderful, wonderful approach. That was number one, to say, look, if you're looking at wanting to feel better, if you want to improve your relationships, if you want to decrease the stress in your life, then try this approach, right? read the book. Go and seek if you feel you'd like to find a therapist who does IPT or does interpersonal psychotherapy. Seek that out. It's not as easy to find because there aren't as many trained therapists, but we also do that. So I think if people continue then to say, I would like my therapist to know how to do this, then they can learn from us as well. So it's really about spreading the word, about really explaining to people that feeling better isn't necessarily what's in their head or isn't necessarily about biochemistry. It can be about that. But it also is about if you want to work on your relationships being better, you're going to feel much. I mean, it's just, it's basic, you know, it feels like common sense, doesn't it? But we're not focusing on that. I think certainly the research shows how important relationships are. And to me, that's the message we're trying to get, is that you have a lot of power within yourself to have great relationships. That's really the message I'd like to convey for people.
Yes, and to yourself and the others. And it seems like in the book, you also kind of explain what people can expect from the weeks in that you work with them, whether they're reading the book or coming to an interpersonal therapy. And what happens to you every week in the kind of search and exploration of that type of therapy within themselves and the relationships? Another part that I was enjoying as you were talking about is the element of consistently having some sort of a reality check out there, that this isn't only happening in my own head. It's really, I keep checking out my head and then I keep checking reality out there to see if it kind of matches my head or not. So I think that's the beauty of what I'm hearing, you know, your work and Ron's work and interpersonal psychotherapy work does. And I want to definitely recommend the book Feeling Better. And they can also find the book in Amazon, and they can also find it in your, if they want to find you and talk to you or Ron, they can also go to interpersonal.com, right? So
it's Feeling Better, the book.
Oh, okay.
So it's easy to really find us. I figure that's the best way. Feelingbetterthebook.com. And yes, absolutely. Feeling better, beat depression, and improve relationships with interpersonal psychotherapy. So it's easy to access, easy to get a hold of in ebook, in paperback, and audiobook. So we'd be delighted to hear also from readers what
Beautiful.
They think and things that they would like to share with us. Thank you.
Beautiful. It was great talking to you and everyone out there. Create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. And guess what? Feel better.
Bye-bye. Bye.